Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 158, Sweet Savory Social with Risa Megad Boyer. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and of course, this is the podcast that's all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen, having fun, learning new things. And today, I'm bringing you a very special, sweet edition of the podcast as I welcome Chef Risa Megad Boyer onto the show to talk about baking sweet treats at home, you know, while most of us are stuck at home. So this is going to be a really fun conversation. I'm going to get to that more in just a minute, but of course, there is a little bit of housekeeping to do before I get to that. First things first, for this particular episode, the show notes, which will include information on Chef Risa's social media, her restaurant, Vanilla More, and a few other things, can be found over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/158. Again, that's kitchencounterpodcast.com/158. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with me, if you have any questions about this episode or ideas for upcoming episodes, you can get in touch with me over at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Sending an email there is probably the most direct way to get my attention. Of course, I'm around on most of the social media channels. And speaking of social media, I do have to plug our amazingly cool Facebook group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break. The ranks of home cooks belonging to that group is growing and growing. We're several hundred strong now. And it's just a really laid back, cool group of people who like to share recipes and pictures and ask questions and give advice and just have a bit of fun when it comes to home cooking and kitchen type stuff. So if you're interested in that, definitely head over to the Facebook group and ask to join. The easiest way to get there is by going to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. That link will get you to the Facebook group page where you can ask to join. And then after that, hey, you're off to the races, and then it's nothing but fun, fun, fun. All right, back to the topic at hand. I mentioned Vanilla More. That's the name of Chef Risa's restaurant in Montclair, New Jersey. It's a really cool place that she started up a couple of years ago to focus on the three aspects that I mentioned in the title of the show, sweet, savory, social, sort of the intersection between all of those things. So sweet, treats and pastries combined with small savory plates. And of course, the social element where people can come together and have a fun night out. The link will be in the show notes, but if you want to check it out, head over to vanillamore.com. It's spelled just like it sounds, vanilla and then M-O-R-E, vanillamore.com. It is temporarily closed right now, like so many places are, unfortunately, due to the coronavirus situation. And that's one of the reasons Chef Risa had time to come on the show and talk and share some pastry chef wisdom with us home cooks and home bakers. So thank you so much, Risa, for doing that. It was really a great conversation, a lot of fun. And I can't wait to hear more about when your cookbook comes out, which we'll talk a little bit about in the episode as well. But because I'm not a baker, admittedly, I think I've mentioned this on the show many, many times, this was a real treat for me too, because I learned a couple of things in this episode that I can put to use right away. And many of you know I'm a total fanatic for marshmallows, and Risa kind of gave me the inside scoop on making marshmallows at home, which I've never tried, but which I'm going to try. Anyway, that's all in this episode and more. So let me just give you a quick note about Risa and then we'll get right into it. Chef Risa trained at the Culinary Institute of America and she graduated with a bachelor's degree in restaurant management and an associate's degree in baking and pastry arts. She interned at Park Avenue in New York City and Pink Cake Box in Denville, New Jersey. And she's worked in New York City restaurants Sweet Revenge and Armani Ristorante, as well as De Novo in Montclair, New Jersey, and Finale in Boston, Mass. Risa comes from a long line in her family heritage of cooks and bakers, so she really is a great person to sit down and have a conversation with if you want to get the inside scoop on some yummy sweet treat baking goodness. All right, without further ado, here's my conversation with Chef Risa Megad Boyer of Vanilla More. Hi, Risa. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited to talk to you today, not least of which we're talking in the middle of this whole weird COVID-19 quarantine stuck at home situation. And everybody in the world is baking right now. So I think,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I think what you have to say is timely, and everybody will be super excited to hear this. And I'm glad I'm talking to you because you're a pastry and sweets expert, right?
Yes, that is what my background is in.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is this weekend, I'm actually going to be talking to some folks who are experts in bread. So this is going to be a great 1-2 punch, I think.
Excellent. Yes, I am a bread lover, but not a bread expert. I dabble in it and definitely learned a lot about it in school, but there are certainly bread pros out there.
Yeah, I cannot count myself as one of them. I can't count myself as a baking pro at all, but we'll probably get into that later. Before we get anywhere, though, why don't you just take a couple of minutes and sort of give us, the thumbnail sketch on who you are and your background. And I know you've got some exciting things in the works. So yeah, why don't you kick it off with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the chef and the owner of Vanilla More, which is a restaurant in Montclair, New Jersey. I was born and raised in New Jersey. I currently live in Morris County with my husband, but I grew up in Wayne going out to eat in Montclair. So it's a very special town for me for a very long time. So to have my restaurant there is definitely very special. We've been open for about 2.5 years. My journey to that point was fairly traditional post-culinary school. I had originally gone to school for graphic design, but realized that sitting in front of a computer and doing my art was not going to work for me. So I decided to go to pastry school where I could use my artistic knack in a very tangible way. So after school, I worked in a variety of small restaurants in New York City and in New Jersey. I taught both pastry and savory classes at Sur La Table for several years, mostly while I was developing the Vanilla More concept. And currently, 2.5 years after having the two best months that we've ever had since opening at the restaurant, we did a full stop thanks to this crazy virus that has taken hold over us at the moment. So right now I am spending my time focused on some of the other projects that we've had that have kind of been given the back burner over the last couple of years. The biggest of which is a cookbook that I'm writing that I know we can dive into a little bit more. I've also been focusing on some of our e-commerce products that we sort of put on the back burner and haven't been working on so much while we've just been focused on daily restaurant operations, which has its own list of battles that you have to fight on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I spent the first 2 weeks of quarantine basically cashing in on all of the weekends that I missed out on over the last couple of years, very much so appreciating it. And now I am going a little stir crazy and look forward to thinking about what the future looks like.
Yeah. And just to mention to listeners too, I'll take all this information that we're going to share too, like your links to your restaurant and your social media and stuff like that. And we'll circle back at the end of conversation about it too, but I'll put them on my show notes so people can find links to them easily. So I did make the terrible, terrible mistake here being stuck at home by going to your Instagram page and looking at it. Now I have serious cravings now because you have some really great looking stuff on there.
Yeah, we've been building our Instagram we started building it almost 2 years before we opened. So we have quite a bit of content. We take lots and lots of pictures of everything that we do every day because you do eat with your eyes first. And part of our experience is really seeing the art on the plate on both the savory and the pastry side of everything. So it's definitely something that we focus a lot on and tease our followers with.
Yeah, well done. It's very good. And it's cool because, again, I'll put the link to your Instagram page, but you have some recipes on there too, which is kind of cool. So I might have to give some of those a try. That's very neat.
Yeah, we've been taking some of this time to really tease some of the recipes that will be in our cookbook.
Aha.
Some of the basic ones that use pantry staples, since getting to the grocery store is not as easy as it used to be these days. So we've been trying to pick some of the recipes that use ingredients that people would have at home so that they can get a taste for what's to come in the cookbook.
Okay, very cool. And well, since we're talking about the cookbook, let's just talk about that a little bit more. I think you told me you're calling it Sweet Savory Social, which is kind of your mantra or tagline from Vanilla More.
Yeah, absolutely. That's sort of the mantra that we live by on a daily basis. It's part of our brand identity. Sweet has always come first in developing our restaurant. It's where my passion lies, but the savory has come to be just as important from a business perspective, but also just me as a chef and learning and growing and developing my skills on a minute-by-minute basis at the restaurant. The social part of that is really where we bring all of it together. Our environment is intended to be very social. It's a big open kitchen. We have a communal counter that people can kind of sit at and look into the restaurant, into the kitchen, which obviously leads to many future challenges and opportunities to solve for, because those are the things that we're all avoiding at the moment. But it's really about the connection to our customers and our community and each other and all of that. So the book really envelops all of that. Both the sweet and the savory section both start with recipes that are sort of like the basics and their building blocks that lead to more complex recipes or ways to sort of combine different recipes or adjust flavor profiles in them. But sort of like building blocks throughout those first two sections. And then the third section, the social section, really dives into a little bit about how we serve some of the recipes at the restaurant, but also you can use them to entertain a group of friends and family at home.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, when I know it's not quite released yet, but as we get closer to that, I'll get some updates from you guys, and I'll be sure to put that into the show notes and share that out on social media too. So I think that's I'm looking forward to that. I'm not a baker, but my wife is, so she's going to be all over this, which makes me happy.
Absolutely, you get to reap those benefits.
Exactly. I know. I was on a work call. And we were chatting, you know, like before everybody gets on, and I said, you know, the joke going around now is like everybody's eating too much in lockdown or whatever you want to call it. And which is in my case, totally true. And I get off this work call and I walk into the kitchen and my wife has made like cake donuts. I'm like, what are you trying to do to me? I mean, I was grateful. I loved it, but it was like, oh, this is exactly what I was talking about.
Exactly. Tell my husband that he must eat incredibly well, but the fact of the matter is I was never home cooking dinner, so he never really got to eat any of the food that I was making. And now I'm actually 5 months pregnant, so that has added a whole nother twist to this. But whatever I'm craving, I just make. So the other day I made cinnamon rolls and I've made biscuits, and now we're attempting to freeze some of it so that we don't all eat it all, because it's only two of us.
Yeah, our problem is if it's there, we'll eat it. There could be worse things to have to worry about, I guess. Let's let's jump in and talk about some baking related goodies here. For me, I just mentioned I'm not a baker. I mean, I can bake. I don't consider myself a very good baker. I'm a pretty good cook. I can cook pretty much anything, and I don't feel apprehensive about like trying to cook new things or try new things. But when it comes to baking, it's a whole different ball game. I like nothing I bake usually turns out. I've got a couple of dishes I can do. Like I can make a cheesecake, shockingly, pretty well, you know, but beyond that, I'm really not a baker. I can't get cookies to turn out right. So I've got this mindset, like I'm a terrible baker. And I don't know. I've never really quite figured out how to get over that. I don't know if that's all in my brain or if there's some truth to that. I'm probably not explaining this very well, but I bet you hear this or you kind of understand what I'm getting at. Baking is just harder, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges that makes a little bit more intimidating than cooking is that you can't taste as you go, sort of having to know what each step should look like and trusting that you're doing it right. And then you don't really know until you're done baking it, you know, an hour later after yep. you've done everything.
Yep.
So I feel like that's one of the reasons why it's intimidating. But as somebody who likes to do both fairly equally, which I think is a little bit rare. I think people tend to gravitate towards one or the other. I like to do both equally, and I sort of I try to apply principles from each to the other. So when I'm baking, I'm very meticulous. I, you know, kind of check in on it as I'm going. But I then at the end will, like, in a cake batter, throw some fresh zest in it or throw some fruit in it or, you know, play around with flavors. And that's sort of where my savory side lends itself to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the flip side, when I'm cooking, I try to, like, let go and be free, but I still follow steps of a recipe in the order that they tell you to. And I'm, you know, a rule follower. So I kind of use that as guidance, but taking a little bit of each and applying it to the other, I think gives you a little bit more freedom from that anxiety.
That's a good point that you make too, about you kind of got to wait for the finished product before you can see if you totally succeeded or jacked it all up. And that can be a bit deflating, I guess, right? You spend all this time and effort and you've tried to do it right. And yeah, it's kind of reminds me of like the good old days when you had cameras that actually used film and you had to wait to get your camera pictures developed to see if any of your pictures turned out.
Exactly.
And like one or two out of a roll of 12 or 24 were good and the rest were all garbage.
Absolutely.
So if I want to get in the kitchen and do some more baking myself, and I'll just pretend my wife isn't around to be a good resource for me, and maybe we can use this whole weird day and age that we live in where we're more or less stuck at home, what are some of the essential things I need to have on hand as far as equipment or tools if I want to, you know, make more than the occasional batch of cookies?
Yeah, I mean, obviously having a stand mixer or a hand mixer makes life easier so that you don't have to sit there and mix everything by hand with a spoon or a spatula. But even if you don't have those things, there's so many recipes that you can make that don't require a lot of tools. Like pie dough, you can make completely by hand, or biscuits, even like cream puffs. I know somebody that I used to work with, every time we made cream puffs, would have flashbacks to his grandmother telling him to stir faster every time he added an egg. And now we just do it in a mixer. We don't even think about it. So obviously to make your life easier, to having a good mixer is an expensive investment. The simpler things are really having a good scale, because when you're weighing ingredients, it's a lot more consistent and you'll have more success that way. I have an endless supply of mixing bowls, spatulas, whisks. I love a good microplane or a zester. You know, those simple, fairly inexpensive tools make all the difference.
Okay. And I heard you mention scales. I hear this a lot, and I have a digital kitchen scale. I love it. I don't personally use it a lot for baking. I use it for other things. It's great for portioning out like proteins and things like that. You know, my mom was a pretty good baker, and she never had a scale. She always used measuring spoons and measuring cups. And if I didn't know any better, I think she eyeballed a lot of it too, weirdly, and stuff turned out. I mean, you know, you just get to the point where you kind of know, you know, what you need to do.
It's a feeling.
It's a feeling, but I think you're right. Kitchen scales are a great investment. They're inexpensive. Yeah. And they do increase the accuracy of what you're doing so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as long as you know how to use your scale's tear feature, which basically allows you to measure multiple ingredients into the same bowl, you know, but it gives you the opportunity to start back at zero, then you can be really successful. And so many baking recipes are based on basic ratios. So that's why if you have a specific amount of flour, the related amount of sugar or butter or eggs is so important. So it's a lot easier to achieve that with a scale. And it's also a lot less cleanup, because you're not cleaning up like six measuring cups at the end of the day.
You just gave me an epiphany, because I'm so glad you said that, because I always use the tear feature just to take out the weight of whatever the bowl is or the plate or whatever I'm measuring onto. And then every time I add an ingredient, I always like do the math in my head. But my God, it makes so much more sense to hit the tear feature and zero it out every time before I add something new.
Right. And then you're not messing up the math in your brain like I would.
Which I probably do. I can't believe I've never thought of doing that. My gosh, you're the best. So let's talk about, I want to talk about new bakers, because I have a lot of listeners. I have a lot of listeners that are really accomplished cooks and bakers, but I have a lot of folks that come to this brand spanking new. And one of the things, because it's a home cooking podcast, and so I talk a lot about cooking. And like one of the things I tell new cooks, for example, is that you really need to understand any recipe before you try to make it, right? You need to read through it. You need to maybe a couple of times and kind of imagine how it goes. And I highly recommend like putting your ingredients out, like mise en place, you know, before you get started. That way you're not running to the fridge to find eggs when, you know, the pan is burning or whatever. What are some baseline, I don't want to say mistakes necessarily, but what do beginning bakers do that if you could give them advice, like don't do that or be sure to do this? What are some of those? Do you have any by chance?
Yeah. I mean, I think the things that you measured are definitely the most important, making sure that you have all of the tools and the ingredients that you need and measuring them all out and doing your mise en place is going to set you up for better success because then you won't be scrambling. Also reading the recipe from top to bottom. For some reason, there are, you know, happen to be mistakes in recipes every once in a while, which is, you know, no big deal. But sometimes you'll read through a recipe and you'll be like, oh, no, that ingredient's not in the ingredient list. So you'll kind of set yourself up for avoiding disaster in that way, too. And also just knowing how long it's going to take, what the next step is, and being prepared is so important. But also in addition to that, I mean, just trusting your instincts and, you know, for example, when a recipe says to cream your butter and sugar until it's light and fluffy, make sure you really see that change happen because that's going to help with the end result of your product. Or if it says add eggs one at a time and mix completely before adding the next, make sure you're doing that. Make sure you're stopping and scraping down your bowl and your ingredients are fully incorporated. There's nothing worse than ending up with a cake that like very clearly had a chunk of butter in it somewhere because you weren't careful to mix everything together. So most recipes are very clear in that way, not over mixing your flour when you're adding it at the end so that it's not tough. You know, those basic guidelines for baking are going to yield a much better result at the end of the day.
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up too, because I think, and you're, you know, you know your way around the kitchen as far as savory goes too, and that's something else I think people have trouble with, and it's not that they intentionally cut corners, but like for an example, you know, make sure your pan is really hot before you put your salmon in there. Well, really hot means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And a lot of people will just get it like that. You could touch it still and they're trying to sear salmon or something. So to your point, making sure that I'm not even sure what I'm trying to say, but you know, making sure you're seeing that distinct phase or state that the recipe calls for. That's really good advice.
Yeah. And I think through the process, writing the cookbook and having other people read the recipe, you realize how much can be misinterpreted and how specific you need to be. And recipes are written in a way in which there's very little misinterpretation as available to you so that it does come out correctly. So it's important, I think, to really follow those steps. I mean, other things that are going to be written in a recipe that are really important to pay attention to are things like the temperature of ingredients. Like if some recipes will say room temperature butter, some recipes will say cold, and really noting what those specifics are is really important because that's going to affect your end result as well.
How important for a home baker, we're talking about temperature, and it just occurred to me, you know, all ovens are different too, right? So how important is it to understand your oven and how it heats and if it has hot spots and things like that? Do you find that to be a challenge for home bakers or not so much?
Yeah, it's actually funny. We redid our kitchen when we purchased our house, and then I spent about 6 months using it, and then we opened the restaurant. So when I started this whole quarantine, I sort of had to relearn my way around my kitchen and remember how to use my oven and, you know, what it baked like. So it's been an interesting adjustment that I imagine most have a challenge with, is really knowing, does your oven run hot or does it not run hot enough? And playing around with the temperature is really important, but equally as important is making sure that there's not a single oven that's going to bake anything evenly. So when it says bake something for 10 minutes, checking after 5 minutes, seeing how far along your product is, will allow for a much more consistent product. So if you know something's supposed to be golden brown at the end, but it's golden brown halfway through, then your oven probably runs hotter than you expect, than you think it does. So really just paying attention, making a new recipe is really important. The other thing you can do is maybe just bake one tray of cookies at a time so that if your first one isn't quite right, you can adjust and, you know, make any adjustments that you need to make for your second tray.
And is it true, boy, you're making me think of all these things I've heard my wife say over the years, and now they're just all flooding into my brain when it comes to baking. What's the deal when you're cooking like multiple trays of cookies? It seems like each subsequent tray like cooks faster, or is that a wives' tale, or am I making something up, or do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your oven. Like at home, I have two racks in my oven, and one of like the top, when whatever's on top doesn't bake as quickly as the one on the bottom, because I guess in the gas oven, he comes from the bottom. So when I rotate my pans 180 degrees, I also switch which rack they're on so that they become more consistent. And a lot of recipes will specifically say bake in the middle of your oven for that reason, so that, and if you're only doing one time, it allows for heat circulation.
And do you find convection ovens are helpful when it comes to baking?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a fan that's blowing the heat around so that in theory it's more consistent. Like the ovens at our restaurant are convection, but sometimes the fan, like if the fan's on too high, it can blow something over. Like if you're making a souffle, you certainly don't want a high fan. Or if there's space left on your parchment paper can blow over. So it comes with other sets of challenges, but in terms of heat distribution, in theory, it should be more consistent.
Okay, so let's talk. You mentioned at the beginning when we were chatting, I think you mentioned something about cinnamon rolls, which sound really good right now. but what? Let's talk about some things, like maybe someone like me who's not an accomplished baker, or maybe even if I was, what are some things that we could whip up here, stuck at home with some pantry staples? Do you have any secret recipes or tips, or I'll just leave it open-ended like that and let you run with it if you'd like.
Yeah. I mean, I think so many baked goods use pantry staples. It's flour, sugar, eggs, milk, yeast, if you can find it. You know, it's basic ingredients. And then it's really about what other things you add to it that can help you personalize your final result. So like the cinnamon buns are really those basic ingredients, and then cinnamon and brown sugar, or some of the recipes that we've posted that have really, I think, been easy to replicate at home are chocolate chip cookies. But if you don't have chocolate chips, why not put, you know, pecans or coconut in there? If you have, or ginger molasses cookies, it's all the basic ingredients. And it sounds like, you know, something that would require a lot of fancy things, but really it's just your basic spices, which I would venture to guess that most people have basic spices in their pantry, especially if they've ever made an apple pie during Thanksgiving. They have all of those warm fall spices that they could possibly need. You know, making biscuits is something that is pretty straightforward. It's basically flour and butter and milk, or buttermilk if you have it. And then you can mix in whatever cheese or herbs or veggies that you have. That's all on the, you know, pastry side. And I know everybody's making bread, and that's four basic ingredients. It's flour, water, salt, yeast. And depending on how much of each ingredient you put in, you can end up with something completely different. You can make bagels with those same ingredients, and you just boil the dough before you bake it. So there's endless options of things that you can make with those basic staples when you're in the mood for something baked.
Okay, I have a question. Maybe a little bit on the spot, but I know this won't be a problem for you. if I've got a bunch of canned fruit, what would be your first instinct? Let's say I have a bunch of canned peaches or canned pineapple or something like that. What kind of yummy pastry things come to mind?
Yeah, I guess two different things. One, like the cinnamon rolls that we were talking about before. I used to make cinnamon rolls at a restaurant that I worked at, and we put apricot jam kind of spread in the middle with the cinnamon and brown sugar, so you could puree those peaches and do that. The other thing in the cookbook, we have a raspberry upside down cake. So you could put those fruits at the bottom of your muffin pan, make a boxed cake or a vanilla cake recipe and put it over the top. And then when you flip them over, you have fancy pineapple upside down cakes or peach upside down cakes. And you've used your canned veggies or fruits, excuse me.
I like it. Oh, yeah. No, let's not do green bean upside down cake. No, that doesn't sound good. Maybe we might be onto something there. I don't know. Okay. I have another question for you. And I think I saw maybe this on your Instagram page, not as a recipe, I think, but just as a picture. I am a total sucker for marshmallows. Like if it's marshmallow anything, I will eat it. I love marshmallows, but I've never made marshmallows. Mm-hmm. If I am not a great baker, is it crazy for me to think I want to try to tackle marshmallows, or are they relatively easy?
Well, we're known for our marshmallows. That people love our marshmallows. Mm-hmm. We make them in all different flavors. We give them away as a little sweet treat at the end of every meal, and we experiment with all sorts of flavors. But the photo that you saw was probably our vanilla bean marshmallows, and they really are very straightforward to make. You absolutely need to have a stand mixer to whip them up properly. And you have to have a candy thermometer because the temperature of the sugar and the corn syrup needs to be very specific. So there's some serious benchmarks that you need to achieve at each step of making marshmallows, but it really is something that you can make at home. It's sugar, gelatin, corn syrup, and water. So it's not a lot of crazy ingredients, but it does take a little bit of confidence.
And focus, right? Baking, that's another thing I've noticed about baking. Unless something's in the oven, it's not really in cooking too. I mean, this is not something you can start and then be distracted by other things and then get back to. You really have to stay on top of it, especially if you're dealing with candy thermometers and specific temperatures.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Risa. So if people want to learn more about your restaurant and or more about you or your social media, can you give us some info on where to find you? And I'll put this stuff in the show notes as well. But if you want to give those shout outs, you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So our Instagram handle at the restaurant is just at VanillaMore. The website is VanillaMore.com, all super straightforward. And then my personal Instagram account where I do a lot of book teases and kind of been documenting what I've been baking while I'm stuck at home is just at Risa Megan Boyer.
Okay, cool. Very cool. And like I said, I'll put those in the show notes. And when we find out more about your impending cookbook release, we'll definitely get that information out there too. Risa, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking about baking in the quarantine. I actually feel like maybe this weekend I might give marshmallows a shot. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
But it's been a real pleasure chatting with you, and I hope you and your family get through all this weird coronavirus thing good and that VanillaMore picks up right where it left off.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Chef Risa Megan Boyer of VanillaMore. Like I said at the beginning, I learned a couple of things in this episode. The most important to me being I've been using the tear function on my scale inefficiently, and dag nabbit, I'm going to correct that right away because I've been doing it the hard way this whole time. And that was really, really a smart tip. So thank you, Chef Risa, for that. As a reminder, the show notes for this episode where you can find links to all those social media locations that Risa mentioned will be at kitchencounterpodcast.com/158. And please, please, please head over to VanillaMore.com. If you're interested in Chef Risa's book, that will have the latest news and it will get regular updates as the book comes closer to fruition. And I might mention, you should really go check out their menus because there's some cool stuff and even some inspirational ideas, I think, that you can find there. So Chef Risa, thank you once again so, so much for coming on the show. That was fantastic. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for one more episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much, as always, for taking a little bit of time and spending it with me today. It means a lot. I know we've all got other things we need to be worrying about these days, and the fact that you take a few minutes to listen to what I have to say and what my friends have to say means a lot to me. If your friends or family might find this show useful, please, by all means, share the link to the podcast with them or the website, or show them how to join the Facebook group.
We're happy to have them as part of our community. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Once again, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.